Now it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Where you can toke.
I inhale.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios.
Hey, this is great.
Freedom, yes, freedom, cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belleville.
That's awesome. This has been a great group. Lots of information, as you guys have seen. Want to introduce this next gentleman. His name is Russ Belleville. He is an Idahoan. His family lives here in Idaho. And he moved to Portland, I believe, around 10 or more years ago, and has made a pretty darn good niche for what he does for a living, which is activism. Radio shows, he's appeared all over the United States. Let's give a big hand to Russ Belleville.
I don't know about you, but I've been sitting a long time. Stand up and stretch if you need to. Relax, because we're gonna have a little bit of fun now. I always like to start things off with a little bit of fun. One time I started a speech off in Texas by saying, "The stars at night are big and bright," and they all went, literally, the whole audience went deep in the heart. So I want to try this. It's been a long time. Boise!
Three!
Boise!
Three!
Boise! God, it warms my heart. So, my name is Russ Belleville. I'm known as Radical Russ Online. You can find me as Radical Russ everywhere. I'm on Gmail, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, SoundCloud, YouTube, MySpace, LinkedIn, Boise State's bulletin board system on the 2400 baud modem in 1985. I actually have Radical Russ in my junior high seventh grade yearbook, so it has nothing to do with politics or craziness. I just got stuck with this name and here I am. So Bill alluded to what I do for a living. I am the host of the Russ Belleville Show on CannabisRadio.com. I host a live daily 2-hour talk radio show on marijuana affairs. I am the CEO and head bottle washer and programmer for a 24-hour music station called 420radio.org. I write 5 articles a week for a website called marijuanapolitics.com. I write 2 articles a week for a website called hightimes.com. I write 2 articles a month for a website called Cannabis Culture. And last year I traveled 60,000 air miles to 29 different cities to deliver the good news about cannabis. So much for that amotivational syndrome, huh? Gosh, Michael Phelps, if he hadn't have smoked pot, maybe he'd have won 20 gold medals instead of 18.
Yeah.
But in addition to all those things, I'm a criminal. Right now. No, I'm not holding. But in Idaho, I don't know if you know this, Idaho is one of 4 states where it's illegal to be high. I got no pot on me right now because I got better sense than that. But I smoked pot yesterday and the day before, and in fact, I have smoked pot just about every day, multiple times a day, since July 4th, 1990. But I didn't smoke it today because I had to fly to Idaho. But because the metabolites of cannabis are still in my body, under Idaho statute, I am guilty of a misdemeanor that can throw me in jail for 3 months and cost me $600. Idaho, Wyoming, South Dakota, and New Jersey are the only states that have that. So when I want to come visit my family for the holidays, I got to think about it a little. Have I cleaned out my car completely? Did I take that joint out of my pocket the other day? Is there anything on me? Do I smell funny? Is the cop watching me come across the border in Ontario, the Oregon State cop, phoning ahead to the Idaho State cop because I got Oregon plates? Yeah. Terror. I lived in terror in this state from 1990 to 2003 as a daily pot smoker. And I was a law-abiding citizen, aside from that law. I paid taxes, worked multiple jobs, generally was a pretty decent guy, I'd say. But at any moment, the wrong turn, the wrong look, the wrong circumstance, the wrong place, the wrong time, I'd have a criminal record right now. I'd be locked up somewhere. And I just don't think that's right. And some people might think, well, Russ, you know it's illegal. You know it was wrong. You shouldn't have smoked pot. You know the consequences. Okay, I can accept the consequences for me, but can you accept the consequences of me being a pot smoker? For example, I've lived just about everywhere in Boise in various neighborhoods, bad and worse. And one time I hear an upstairs, I'm in one of those houses in the North End where they cut it up into like 9 apartments, right? And I'm in my apartment and I can hear thuds and cracks and cries and upset, like somebody's getting beaten, domestic abuse. Gosh, I should call 911. Well, maybe I shouldn't. Maybe those cops will want to talk to me a little. Maybe they'll want to look in my house. Maybe they won't like the way I smell. Maybe I shouldn't call 911. How many pot smokers are out there right here in Idaho that are afraid to deal with the police? Afraid to interface with the police? Thank you. Afraid to interface with the police. I don't want to be that way. I want to help people that are in need. I don't want my choice to use marijuana instead of alcohol to impact my ability to be a good citizen, and yet it does. Fast forward to me moving to Oregon and being under the medical marijuana program there. I'm driving down the road one day and on my way to a meeting, and I've got 4 4-foot cannabis plants in the back of my Jeep. Now I'm driving along, and I see a Portland police officer pull in behind me at the stoplight, and I can see the rack of lights, right? And that, you ever gotten that cold chill? Like, oh shit. Wait a minute, I'm not doing anything wrong. I have a medical marijuana card. I can't tell you the relief I felt that day. It's like, oh my God, I'm not a criminal. Amazing. So the state of Idaho is a really harsh state, and part of the reason I left the state of Idaho was I got married in 1999. And my wife, as it turns out, is a sufferer of migraines and, at the time, endometriosis, which is like cramps on steroids, ladies, right? Okay? Nothing works better for migraines and cramps than medical marijuana. Queen Elizabeth used to use, Queen Victoria in the 1800s used to use cannabis for her cramps. So I told my wife, you need to try this marijuana for your migraines. I'd taken her to the emergency room like 6 times for migraines. These are bad migraines. And about the 7th time, and looking at that $700 bill, I went, hon, why don't you try smoking this joint? Oh no, that's okay for you, but you know, my brothers were potheads and I don't want to have anything to do with it. I don't want to smoke this joint. I said, well, I ain't taking you to the emergency room, so you can sit here in pain and you can try this joint. She smoked that joint. Have you ever watched like the cartoons, like when Wile E. Coyote gets hit in the toe with a hammer and it goes like a thermometer and a red and it pops out of his head? Reverse that. Watching the pain wipe away from my wife's face, on the first hit, she was hooked. I guess probably not the best word, but she was convinced of the medical efficacy of medical marijuana. And then later, when she had some of those cramp attacks, and I suggested again, and the cramps went right away, she was convinced. And that was the moment I knew we had to leave Idaho. I've been a stoner in Idaho for 13 years. I know the protocol. Y'all are gonna get me arrested, hun. Y'all are gonna mess up somehow, and I'm gonna end up in jail. So we're going to Oregon. We became medical marijuana. I was a caregiver, she was a patient. Everything went from that point on. And I remember even in Idaho, the first time I ever smoked a joint, it was July 4th, 1990. I was a long-haired rock and roll musician back in the day. And also, Little trivia I forgot to mention. I was Boise State's last Buster Bronco on green turf my freshman year. Back in the day when we were 1AA and getting our ass kicked by Idaho for 13 years in a row, you kids these days don't know how good you got it with your Fiesta Bowls. And all right. So anyway, July 4th, 1990, I'm in this band with these long-haired musicians. We're up in McCall, Idaho, for a July 4th thing at the resort, the Yacht Club. I don't know if you heard of the Yacht Club, right? And so we get done with the gig, and I was still in the National Guard, just at the end of the National Guard at this time, and we go upstairs after the gig, and the long-haired guitar player pulls out a joint, starts passing it around. I'm like, uh-oh, I'm in a band with guys that do drugs. Now, you need to understand my mindset at the time. My father's sitting here. This is John Belville. Hi, Dad. My dad is a recovered alcoholic since 1980. He was a professional musician. Yeah, sure, you can do that. He was a professional musician and an alcoholic all the time. I was up to 12 years old. And then he went and got recovery, went back to college at Boise State. We both graduated in 1985. We have this great picture. He's in his Boise State gown. I'm in my Nampa High School gown. Go Bulldogs. And he went back to school, became a social worker, and went back to the place he got rehab and became a drug and alcohol counselor, right? So I've seen the whole spectrum. I've seen the alcohol side, then I've seen the Al-Anon side, right? I've been on both sides of this issue. So 1990, I'm Mr. No Drugs. Oh, drugs are bad. Oh, don't do drugs, right? So when this guitar player pulls this joint out, I was freaked out. I'm like, oh my God, I'm in a band. I love these guys. I love this band, but they do drugs. So they start passing the joint around, and it came around to me, and I went, no thanks. And they went, okay. That was the first clue. I was like, wait a minute, where's that? You're such a puss, you can't have, where was the arm twisting? Where was the peer pressure? It wasn't there. Their attitude was more like, hey, great, more for us. So this goes around two or three times in the circle, and they're kind of laughing and giggling and relaxed, and I went, that doesn't look like they're turning into axe murderers or anything. I mean, let me try that, right? Tried that joint, and I went, this is drugs? This is the drugs. Now, I've been drinking alcohol since I was 16 years old. 16 to age 22, I could drink more than you, faster than you, longer than you. Guaranteed. You remember Animal House? You remember Bluto from Animal House with the Jack Daniels? Guilty as charged. I could drink your face off. And I'm thinking, this is drugs. Not the tequila that got me into a fight. Not the vodka that made me puke. Not the rum that made me wake up with strange women. This is drugs? Now, the problem with that is once I realized they were lying about the pot, I figured they're lying about the coke. I figured they're lying about the meth. I decided I was going to try all the drugs and find out what else they were lying about. Guess what? They weren't lying about the other ones, just the pot. And so that formed another one of my opinions that, like, we're causing harm to our children by telling them these lies about pot. And when they find out we were lying about that, we must have been lying about everything. I don't advocate anyone try it my way, by the way. Sent me to a hospital and nearly killed me. But it was a valuable life lesson. Now, also in Idaho, I do my radio show, and one time, there is a drug czar, his name is John Walters, Bush's drug czar, I think. And one time he said, finding a first-time nonviolent marijuana offender in jail or prison is like finding a unicorn. You find one and you've got a story because they just don't exist. How many people have ever been in a cell for marijuana? You don't have to raise your hand, but I have, right? So I know for a fact they're putting people in cages for marijuana. But then I thought to myself, well, let's play a game with this. So I came up with a radio contest, and it was called Find the Marijuana Unicorn. And the goal of the contest is if you could call in, tell me your story of how you got busted for the least amount of weed and did the most time, you win. Least amount of weed, most time, you win. So I got guys coming, yeah, I got caught with a gram and I had to do this time. I got caught with a speck. I got caught with a seed, right? I had all these guys call in. The winner was this woman who was a young lady who was a student at Idaho State University. She did jail time from the day before Christmas Eve to the day after New Year's Day in a jail in Pocatello, Idaho. Is that where Idaho State is, Pocatello? Yeah, Pocatello, Idaho. did 15 days in jail because she was found to be in a dorm room that had a brand new, never used, no water in it, empty glass bong. No pot. Nobody had any pot on him. The girl had never even smoked pot. She was visiting a friend who was a pot smoker but didn't have any pot in the room, had no priors. The bong's never been used because Idaho has this law called frequenting a place of known drug activity. If you're merely at someone's house, whether you know it or not, and they've got drugs or paraphernalia stored in that house, you're guilty and you go to jail. I said, sister, you did 15 days in jail for no weed, like none, no weed at all. And she did 15 days in jail. So don't tell me that people don't do time for this and it doesn't affect people. Now, this, I mentioned my wife with medical marijuana just last month. I had to face another medical marijuana situation. My brother lives here in Idaho. He's 45 years old, all of a sudden out of nowhere, stage 4 colon cancer. Now the good news is they chopped out half his colon and got rid of the cancer and it didn't metastasize, so now I call him semicolon. But I was in a dilemma. I'm sitting in Portland, Oregon thinking, how many cancer survivors do I know who've gotten such relief from cannabis oil? And yet my brother is 40 miles across the border that makes that a felony. Do I dare, with my high profile and the Idaho State Police knowing me by name, do I dare cross the Idaho border with cannabis oil to try to save my brother's life? Since I don't know if law enforcement's in the audience, I won't answer that question. But you can probably imagine what my decision was. So this is a very personal thing to me about Idaho and moving forward with medical marijuana. And the fact is that Idaho is surrounded. You're surrounded, Idaho. You can try to keep it illegal all you like, but you got Oregon and Washington to the west that have legal marijuana. Nevada's got it on the ballot this year. They'll pass it. So to the south of you, there will be legal marijuana. Anybody from Boise who wants weed can go to Oregon. Anybody from Coeur d'Alene or Moscow or Lewiston that wants weed can go to Spokane. Anyone in Twin Falls that wants weed, very shortly, will be able to go down to Jackpot, Nevada, where they will add a few dispensaries to the 4 casinos and a golf course out there. To the southeast is Utah. Now, here's something to give you an idea how messed up Idaho is on this situation. There's been medical marijuana for a long time. We've been doing this since 1996 in California. And it's generally been whole plant, grow some buds, smoke some herb, medical marijuana. But lately, there's been this push for CBD oil. Have you heard of this? Okay, so they got these little kids, right? They got epilepsy, they got Dravet syndrome, they got these hundreds of seizures a day. And then we found out, hey, if you give them some of this CBD, now marijuana's got two major constituents, THC and CBD. THC is the one to get you high, CBD doesn't. In fact, CBD is an antipsychotic that actually cuts the high of THC. So they figured out if you take this high CBD stuff with very low or no THC in it and you give it to these epileptic kids, bam! 100 seizures a day goes to one a week. And so this became kind of a new understanding of this around, you know, early last year, early 2014, I should say. The very first state to pass this was Utah. Utah, you know, that crazy bastion of hippie liberalism? You know, those wacky long-haired potheads with their Books of Mormon and such, you know? Utah. After Utah, this got passed in Iowa and Wisconsin and Missouri and every state in the Confederate South. Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, all these states have CBD oil. So they proposed it up here in Idaho, and your governor, Butch Otter, vetoed it. Vetoed it. Looked at little kids having hundreds of seizures a day and 15 other states like Utah and the South that have allowed this and said, nope, not here, by God. We're not going down that slippery slope. You give those kids non-psychoactive oil that doesn't get them high, the next thing you know, people will smoke pot like they're not now. So Idaho's surrounded. Utah, down there in the southeast, they've got CBD, and their governor just this week came out and signaled his he's looking toward expanding that program and providing even more access in Utah. Wyoming has this CBD oil law. So on the east, you're completely surrounded. Montana has medical marijuana. And the country of Canada elected a liberal prime minister who's sworn he's going to legalize Canada. Idaho, you're surrounded. There's no escaping it. There's pot all around you. So you can try to decide what you're going to do with that. Right now, the decision is to keep prohibition. And especially the Idaho State Police working with the Oregon State Police to coordinate with each other. So people coming from Oregon, we're going to bust them, make sure we get their pot, steal their money at the same time, take their assets. A lot of money involved in this. But it's gotten to the point where the Payette County Sheriff has said, my jail is full. I can't bust any more people for pot. So if you want to keep this prohibition, you better start building more jails. Because we're not stopping. I lived here in Idaho, one of the most prohibition states there is. Nothing stopped me from smoking pot every day. To this day, I can walk out of this ballroom and there are 5 different locations I can go to and buy marijuana right now. So you're not stopping it. My marijuana habit when I lived here in the state of Idaho was about 1 ounce a month. Ounce in Idaho generally costs about $300. $300 times 12 months works out to $3,600. $3,600 over 13 years works out to about $42,000-$43,000 that I spent on marijuana in Idaho. Guess how much taxes I paid on that? It's an integer below 1 and above negative 1. 0 taxes that I spent on that. So another thing I like to bring up too, because, you know, Idaho's going to be a tough nut to crack, right? You know the old saying, Idaho is what America was. Welcome to Idaho. Set your clock back 30 years. You know the sayings, right? Not going to be easy. So one of the things I often counsel is, I'm not here to convince you that pot's great or that you should do it. All I'm here to do is to try to convince you that the more sensible way to deal with it is to regulate it and at least recoup some tax money off of it and create some jobs. I tell this anecdote of my redneck cousin. And redneck cousin, Hunter Fisher, good God-fearing conservative Republican type, drinks a 6-pack of beer, watches pro wrestling, you know the type, right? So I often think, talking to redneck cousin, gee, redneck cousin, why do you love hippies so much?
Love hippies, what do you mean?
Why do you love hippies so much? I mean, gosh, you get up every morning at 6 in the morning. You get in your pickup truck and drive a commute on I-84 to go to a job you hate. You work there for 8-9 hours a day, pay 30% in payroll taxes, and then pay all your bills. And then with whatever little money you got left, maybe you buy a 6-pack or a 12-pack, head back to the house, turn on pro wrestling and enjoy yourself, right? Meanwhile, hippie sleeps till noon, wakes up, goes to the park, slings a couple bags, 3-4 bags for an hour or two, pays no taxes on it, goes home, smokes pot, eats Funyuns, and watches Comedy Central. You know what hippie would hate, redneck uncle? Hippie would hate it if you legalized it. If he had to get up in the morning and put on a shirt and comb his hair and go to a specific building and have to fill out paperwork to get a license to do such a thing, and then work an actual job, and then have to pay taxes. Oh, hippie would hate that. So why do you love hippie so much? And I actually, you know, it's funny because this has actually come true in my life. I'm called Radical Russ because, you know, I'm here from Idaho and all my views were so crazy radical. But then I moved to Portland, Oregon. I like football, eat meat, and drive an SUV. Conservative evil, right? So I can't win, right? I'm too liberal for Idaho and too conservative for Portland. But it's actually happened to me now where a lot of the true believer pot supporters hate my guts because I'm for taxes and regulation and inspections and licensing and all of that. They hate it. They hate me for that. Marijuana ought to be as free as tomatoes. We ought to be able to grow all we want, everywhere we want, anytime we want, with no age limits. They hate me. So I have evidence The hippies do not like it when you legalize marijuana. Take that to heart. Now, I also wanted to spend the last part of this addressing our opponents. I was a little disappointed, actually, because I do a lot of these gigs, and this happens. This is not the first time this has happened to me, where the other side doesn't want to show up. It may be because they've seen Inga in action. She was a part of our Oregon Measure 91 debate. It was a televised debate with her and another one of our supporters versus a district attorney and a doctor. The doctor got laughed out of the room when he said, in Colorado, 5 infants have died from marijuana poisoning. He had to issue a retraction, and when they re-showed it on the TV, they put a caption up saying, Dr. Schwertzler has retracted this statement. So yeah, that kind of embarrassed them. I don't think they want to face off against Inga anymore. And I've been in debates with the leading prohibitionists. I did one at Texas Christian University, TCU. And you gotta love it. I went to TCU, and I brought my little 2-inch square of Boise State turf and put it right here. Made all those TCU horned frogs look at my blue turf all day. That was great. But I debated at TCU. I debated at the Baker Institute in Houston against the leading prohibitionist. And they don't like to debate me because they're outnumbered. Because I've got fact, science, reason, logic, compassion, love, and truth on my side. But let me address these guys. First of all, Alicia Figueroa, your state's drug czar, wrote to us to say, I am disappointed by the continued manipulation of the Marijuana Forum by New Approach. I shared my concerns with you last week, yet there has now been the last minute of addition of another radical speaker from out of state. Look at this crazy radical 69-year-old grandma. As a result, it has become clear that what was billed as a college forum for meaningful discussion has turned into a choreographed pro-marijuana rally. Since this is, I will not be participating in the forum and blah, blah, blah. Look, the only thing that turned this into a pro-marijuana rally is the lack of the opposition to marijuana. So that they and the state police bailed out of this, and that's just disappointing to me. The state police said, I'm sorry to cancel on the day of the event, but after consultation with the Office of Drug Policy, your drugs are, we are going to set this one out as we're not sure we'll add much to the discussion. The state police don't think they have anything to add to this discussion, but you turn on your local news, they got plenty to say, don't they? In fact, the Idaho State Police say in their anti-marijuana online document, quote, the interests of Idaho should be protected and maintained by those with a personal vested interest in securing a bright future for our children free from the devastating effects of drug use. But they had nothing to say here. So I think it's probably best that they don't have anything to say because we're going to wipe them out. And you've heard from some of our speakers already today some of the mythology and some of the scaremongering and propaganda that they try to pass off to justify asset forfeitures, easy arrests, all the benefits they get from keeping marijuana illegal. One of which, of course, is you have a private prison here in Idaho. Corrections Corporation of America signed a deal with the state that requires the state to keep that prison 90% occupied, or the state has to start paying the company. So there's a whole lot of motivation to keep people going into those beds, and marijuana is the key that unlocks the Fourth and Fifth Amendment. If a cop doesn't have a good reason for dealing with you on the side of the road, doesn't have a probable cause, all he has to say is, well, I smell marijuana. Well, you can't prove he didn't. There's no smell-o recorder, right? There's no way you can prove he didn't smell marijuana. Or, of course, they can bring in the warrant on a leash, known as a canine. Oh, my canine dog alerted. Interesting thing about canine dogs. First of all, they're about 75% inaccurate in general circumstances. But there was this great study they did with the canines and the cops that run them. They took teams of canine dogs and cops, and they sent them to 4 different rooms. Now, the rooms could have one of 2 things in them, or both. They could have a red piece of paper taped on the door, and that means there's drugs in the room. They could not have a red piece of paper on the door, and that means there's not drugs in the room. There could be drugs in the room, or there could not be drugs in the room. And in this case, drugs were sausages and tennis balls. They didn't really use drugs. They used sausages and tennis balls, something a dog would like, right? So you got four types of rooms. A room with drugs and a red piece of paper. A room without drugs and a red piece of paper. A room with drugs, but no piece of paper. And a room with nothing in it. No piece of paper, nothing, right? Now, logically, you'd think, okay, if it's a drug dog, he smells, and so he's going to go buy the sausages and the tennis balls that he smells. But the cop is going to go buy the red piece of paper that he sees on the door. Guess where the dogs alerted more? The rooms with the red piece of paper, whether there were drugs in them or not. Because dogs have evolved for tens of thousands of years to please us. And if the dog knows his master gets pleased when he alerts on something, he tends to want to do that. So our entire Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights are abrogated by the state with a warrant on a leash. So let me get to some of their interesting points. Another thing I wanted to say about prohibition before I forget. Once upon a time, there were just, this is a story I read long ago. Maybe you've read the same story. Once upon a time, there were two people. They were named Adam and Eve. And then there was this guy who was in charge of them who was all powerful and knows everything. And he said, "The one thing I prohibit you from ingesting is an apple." If God can't make prohibition work on two people, how do we expect the state to make prohibition to work on a million of them? But let me go through some of the stuff. This is on the Idaho State Police website right now. It's a PDF file you can download about marijuana legalization. And they say, drug abuse impacts the family in forms of child abuse and or abandonment, domestic violence, the incidence of violence when someone addicted commits a violent act against another for their money or their property to satisfy their own addiction. They are also innocent victims who are murdered, raped, or assaulted as a result of someone's addiction, which is a result of a lack of self-control. Okay. We can't legalize pot because then we'll all go a raping and a beating and a murdering. Do you know any pot smokers? but feel free to go to one of our taverns and enjoy all the alcohol you like, because that doesn't cause anyone to beat or rape or murder anyone. Here's another. Marijuana is considered, Marijuana is considered a gateway drug, one which tends to lead users down a path towards the use of other drugs, such as cocaine and methamphetamine. Well, I told you my story. The gateway was the fact that I was lied to about it. But here's the other thing. Doesn't it kind of strike you as odd that they have to warn you that marijuana is bad because something else is terrible? That'd be like me telling you, hey, look, don't buy your kid a big wheel. Every Hell's Angel I ever knew started on a big wheel. And we know motorcycles are dangerous and Hell's Angels commit crime. Big wheels are the gateway to motorcycle gangs. Makes no sense. And as far as a gateway goes, for people under the age of 65, more than half of us have tried marijuana in our lifetime. That's about 100 million, 105 million people. Currently, according to the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, about 3 million people use all other illicit drugs other than weed. There's about 2 million cocaine users. It's about 350,000 heroin users. There's another 500,000 that use acid or shrooms or whatever. Right? 3 million total use all other drugs. So if this is a gateway, 100 people came to the gate and only 3 walked through it. Not a very good gateway. And the flip side of this is that marijuana is not a gateway drug, it's an exit drug. When I had my bout with methamphetamine addiction in the mid-90s, you know what got me off the meth? Well, they prescribed me oxycodone first, but I started really, really liking that. And that's why I said, oh no, let's not do that. Let's smoke a joint. It got me off of the methamphetamine addiction. And we have surveyed medical marijuana patients across the country, California, Colorado, all these places. And we find 2/3 to 3/4 of the people currently using medical marijuana are using it as a substitute for their prescription drugs, for their alcohol addictions, or their other drug addictions. Marijuana is the gateway out of addiction. And again, as the professor mentioned, and by the way, if I could grow a beard like that, shit, I sure would, man. That's awesome. That is so awesome. You fit right in Portland, sir. Portland's gonna love you. But this is scientifically validated. The federal government's own 1999 Institutes of Medicine declared that there is no causal effect of gateway from using weed to using something else. And every study since then has agreed. All right, how about this one? I love this one. Sometimes we make the point that alcohol is a drug. And the Idaho State Police say, alcohol and drugs are not the same. People drink, not necessarily to become intoxicated. However, people use drugs for the sole purpose of getting high. Yes, the old drinkers drink to be social, but stoners toke to get high argument. This is actually on the Nixon tapes. Art Linkletter and Richard Nixon discussed this in 1971. You can go to the Nixon archives. It's the same BS as it was then. But let me play a thought experiment with the Idaho State Police. All right, Idaho State Police, next time you're having one of your grand soirees, you know, because policemen don't have balls. Next time you're having one of your grand soirees, replace all the wine with grape juice and replace all the beer with O'Doul's and your beer. And tell me just how social everybody was that night. See, the problem with this, the reason this myth still exists, is because we are actually shielded by our language from understanding that alcohol is a drug. We have an entirely different vocabulary for drinking than we do for drugs. You're not taking drugs, you're drinking. You're not a drug user, you're a social drinker. You're not a drug addict, you're a problem drinker. You're not high, you're buzzed. You didn't just overdose, you blacked out. You're not suffering the after effects of an overdose, you're just hungover. Isn't that weird? We have an entirely different vocabulary for taking that drug. I try to flip it on them sometimes. Sometimes I'll say, you know, they'll say, oh, we need a drug-free workplace. I go, really? Have you ever worked in a drug-free workplace? I've not. I've never worked in a drug-free workplace. In fact, this one workplace I worked at, they actually took company money to build a shelter for drug addicts to go out twice a day for 20 minutes at a time to go get their fix. Now, they call it a smoke break, but that's what it is. Nicotine's a drug, people. And that's when they always say, well, we can't legalize pot because it would reduce productivity. Really? More than the nicotine addicts who are going outside 20 minutes a day every 2 hours? I'm the guy who came to work at 7 in the morning and worked till 6 at night, worked through lunch because I knew I was a pothead and I had to be extra good to make sure they wouldn't bust me. So don't tell me productivity. And this idea that drinkers drink to be social, tokers smoke to get high, is only because we don't have the language to recognize how people smoke pot. When it comes to smoking pot, it's high or not high. You're not high and now you're high. There's no gradation in there, right? But with drinking, oh, I'm gonna have a social drink and then maybe I'll get tipsy, and if I keep drinking, I'll get buzzed, and if I have too much, I'll get drunk, and then way too much, I'll get sloshed, and if I go too far, I'll get hammered. We understand there's a set of steps, right? You don't go from I don't drink to I'm drunk, right? We know that that's not the way it works, and it's the same way it works for marijuana. I can tell you, I smoke pot every day. I can go from relaxed to lifted to high to medicated to baked to couch locked. There's a spectrum. And this idea that tokers aren't doing this for social reasons, what's more social than a joint circle? A bunch of strangers passing around a spit-covered joint to each other. When's the last time you ever saw a bunch of drinkers with a stein passing it around? Yeah, you have some. You have some. No, what's more social than smoking a joint? Now, they've got another part. They say, the Idaho State Police say, there is proof that marijuana increases harmful and criminal behavior on the part of the user. Proof, they say. No hyperlinks or footnotes, but proof. So how is it that the violent crime and property crime rates in Colorado and Washington have declined since they legalized? They don't seem to be tearing up the streets and causing all sorts of problems. I love this one.
Marijuana use leads to chronic and interim effects from regular use, specifically with regards to decreased testosterone, reduced sperm count and motility, altered sperm structure with chromosomal and DNA alterations, interference with the ovulation and hormone cycle in women, suspected mutagenic alterations in DNA of germ cell chromosomes, and embryocidal toxicity and development impairment in the fetus of newborns exposed in utero. Whew! Damn. I guess I better tell that to Tommy Chong, 6 kids. To Willie Nelson, 7 kids. To Bob Marley's, 12 kids. To all those damn Rasta and hippie kids I see at every pot festival I go to. If marijuana were seriously causing a problem with reproduction, Jamaica would be unpopulated. Idaho State Police also say drugs were legal prior to 1914, and although data is lacking, there is good evidence that with 1/3 of today's population, drug addiction was greater. That's why we outlawed drugs. Untrue on 2 counts. Count number 1, we have data going back to 1875 that shows throughout history, and regardless of the legality or illegality of specific substances, 1% of the population are drug addicts. 1% of the population were drug addicts in 1875, 1% were drug addicts in 1910 when they started passing the Opium Acts, 1% were addicts during alcohol prohibition, 1% were alcoholics in the 60s and the Flower Child, Flower Power era, 1% are addicts now. What they're addicted to shifts a bit, but about 1% of the people become addicted. And the other way that they are factually incorrect is drugs were not made illegal because they were dangerous. Drugs were made illegal because black and brown people used them. The first anti-drug laws, actually black, brown, and Asian people, the first anti-drug laws, anti-opium acts, were passed that made Chinese people running opium dens illegal because the Chinamen, their term, were taking all the white women, were seducing the white women. Now, if you were a white guy and had an opium den, no problem. Chinese opium den, bad. Cocaine was made illegal when the South, the racists in the South said it turned the Negroes into superhumans that could withstand bullets. Unfortunately, that's a belief a lot of our police officers still seem to have. But it was made illegal because it was anti-black. It was a way to get on to the black jazz musicians of the 10s and the 20s of the last century. And marijuana was made illegal first in El Paso in 1914 because the Mexicans are coming to take our jobs. And they realized you couldn't lock people up for being Mexican, brown, or Asian, but you could lock them up for what they were using. And that's why those drugs were made illegal. Here's one. This is great. Idaho State Police say, on average, marijuana users have 30% more fat than non-marijuana users. 30%, well, I don't know if I'm the guy to address this. But actually, what? Does this mean everybody at the Walmart in Nampa is a pot smoker? I've seen those people. Actually, the latest studies on this, and we've had studies on this for the past 4 years, different research universities that have all come to the same conclusion, marijuana smokers actually have lower body mass index than non-marijuana smokers. We're actually less fat than non-pot smokers. And marijuana, THC, has been shown to help mediate blood sugar and insulin. It could actually be a preventative for diabetes, which I tend to think is why I don't have it yet. It kind of runs in my family. Here's one. Oh, I love this one. Idaho State Police say the tax earned on marijuana would not be enough to cover the abuse created in our society. Now, this is a long time thing. Before Colorado and Washington legalized, this guy named Kevin Sabet ran around the country, and he said, well, for every dollar we take in alcohol and tobacco taxes, it costs us $10 in social costs. To which I say, yeah, because alcohol and tobacco are toxic and addictive. Of course they cause more harm. Now, we don't even have to guess. Colorado and Washington have pulled in $200 million in tax revenue
So where's that $2 billion in social costs? Hell, I'll give them a break even. Where's the $200 million in social costs? And that's not even counting the money we've saved on not sending cops after people and putting them in cages and hiring probation officers and all the stuff we have to deal with. Forget that. $200 million in tax revenue, where's the harm? Where's the bodies? Where's the costs? They're not there. Here's another one you might hear often. There is evidence which indicates that the carcinogens in marijuana are stronger than those in tobacco. Also, numerous studies have found that marijuana causes precancerous changes similar to those of tobacco. Okay, and the hydrogen that we find in water is more explosive than the oxygen. But when you put two hydrogen atoms together with an oxygen atom, it's not flammable or explosive. You know why? Chemistry matters. Any vegetable matter that you burn has carcinogens in it, but marijuana smoke also has THC in it. THC has been shown to be an anti-tumoral against cancer. This goes back to 1974, University of Virginia found that THC injected into brain cancer cells in a petri dish causes those cells to commit suicide. THC actually makes cancer cells commit suicide. And that's why Dr. Donald Tashkin in 2006, he's a University of California, Los Angeles pulmonologist, hired by the federal government, had federal grants, find out the link between pot smoking and lung cancer. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, find the link between pot smoking and lung cancer. So he did a 30-year retrospective meta-analysis of all the data on people who smoke pot and the data for lung cancer. And he found that not only did pot smokers not get more cancer, they get less cancer. Marijuana smokers have less incidence of lung cancer than non-smokers do. Not tobacco smokers. You don't smoke anything. I smoke pot. Lower chance I get lung cancer than you. They also found that there was lower incidence of head, neck, and throat cancers than people who don't smoke pot. And other pulmonologists have found that there is no chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or that, you know, the emphysema, those kind of things that tobacco smokers get, pot smokers don't get them. Now, to be fair, we do get a little bit of a cough. We get a little bit of a hack. It's not cancer, not COPD. So that is yet another bogus statement. Other things that they like to bring out is this IQ thing. How many have heard this thing? They say, well, you know, if you smoke pot, they did this study in New Zealand. If you smoke pot as an adolescent, you'll lose 8 points of IQ by the time you're an adult. Now, that wasn't much of a threat to me. I had a pretty high IQ. I could use a few points, knock off the top. That's no big deal to me. But is it true? It's not. The same data that they used in 2012 to prove that adolescents would have lower IQs as an adult was debunked the next, like 6 months later, by another researcher in the same journal who found once you accounted for gender and age and alcohol use and tobacco use and socioeconomic factors and all these other things, once you accounted for that, there was no difference. Pot smokers were just as smart as anybody else. This has just been confirmed last week. The largest study, King's College at the University of London, studied 2,000 sets of twins. One who was a pot-smoking twin, one who was a not-pot-smoking twin. And they said, well, how did they turn out? No difference. Now, some of the pot-smoking teens did turn out to be less smart, but so did their twin. So what they found, or what they're theorizing now, is that it's not the pot-smoking, it's the environment. Wherever these two kids were raised is causing the problem, not the situation with the marijuana. Another popular thing they say is legalizing marijuana will cause stoned mayhem on the freeways. We'll have stoned drivers out there wrecking and hurting and killing and maiming. Well, newsflash, legalizing marijuana does not invent marijuana and cars. People are smoking pot now. They're driving now. And has there been a mass increase in wrecks? No. Over the past 20 years, the fatalities per 100 million miles driven has fallen nationwide from about 2 per 100 million miles to less than 1 per 100 million miles. And the decline is more pronounced in Colorado, Washington, Oregon, and Alaska. their states actually have lower than the national average. And again, it's that cartoon. Do you know how slow you were going? Right? It's that old cartoon. So the Stone Mayhem on the freeway, complete bogus thing. They say that if you smoke pot, you're going to lose your memory. It's going to affect your memory. Now, I'll be honest. While you're high, oh, yeah. I can't tell you how many times I've walked into a room and gone, why did I come in here? So, yeah, I'm not going to lie. There can be some, while you're high, memory problems. But while you're not high, no memory problems. Let me prove it. We just recently had the State of the Union address, right? Did you know during the State of the Union that one member of the cabinet does not attend the State of the Union? Because in our Constitution, if the president is killed, then the vice president takes over. If the vice president is killed, the Secretary of State takes over. And then after the Secretary of State, it goes to the members of the cabinet secretaries, in the order in which those departments were created. And that would be State, Treasury, Justice, Interior, Agriculture, Commerce, Labor, Health, Housing, Transportation, Energy, Education, Veterans Administration, and Homeland Security, in that order. Now, I read it, obviously, but I wrote it while I was sitting here off the top of my mind. Because Mrs. Rosenbaum, in my junior government class in Nampa, taught us a song. STDJIACLHHTEEVAHS. And that's the initials of all the departments in order for the succession to the presidency. I learned that 31 years ago. And I smoke pot every day and can still recall it from memory. So don't give me the memory problem. And finally, to wrap up, something just to readdress what Inga had mentioned is the follow the money aspect of marijuana prohibition. I mentioned the private prisons. You got private prisons here, they got to stay 90% occupied. Easiest way to bust people is having that easy marijuana smell to get into their car and figure out what we can bust them for. There's the rehabs. If you're a drug rehab, you are getting court-ordered clients for your business. How many people run a small business? How many of you would like it if the court forced you to have clients? If the court forced customers into your door, that would be great. Yeah, send them my way. That's the way the rehabs think. And when you're a rehab, you're getting grants. You're getting all this money that you have to justify in your budget. So you need to show that your program works, that you actually cure addicts. If you had a room full of heroin addicts and you had to show your results for how well you cured them, that would be a lot harder row to hoe than having a room full of potheads that you threaten with a pee test and they go to jail if they fail. 37% of the people in rehab for marijuana alone, according to the treatment episode data set, which is federal data, 37% of them didn't smoke pot the month before they went to rehab. Marijuana, the drug so addictive, over a third of the people in rehab didn't even use it for a month. And another 16% used it once, twice, or three times that month. That's not a terribly, terribly addictive thing. So if I can get a bunch of potheads in my rehab, threaten them with a pee test, and then they pee clean, I can say, look how successful my drug rehab is. I cured a bunch of people who didn't need curing, basically. Drug testing. Oh, that's the new one, drug testing. We're gonna drug test everyone. We're gonna drug test. I actually covered a story in California, one of the school districts in California, drug testing their middle schoolers. Sixth grade girl wants to play viola in the school orchestra. She can't because her parents won't let her take a drug test. She has to take a pee test to play viola in the school orchestra. Now, the drug testing was started with, oh, well, pilots and conductors and you know, we got to make sure they're not high. And then it expanded to, well, we need to expand it to safety-sensitive positions, the guys driving forklifts and, you know, that kind of stuff. And then it expanded to, well, we need to drug test everybody in the workplace just to make sure. And then it expanded to, we'll drug test high school athletes because they play football and there's danger and we don't want them high. And then we said, no, let's drug test all the high school students for all the extracurricular activities. And then we said, no, let's drug test the middle school students. There's money in that drug testing. One of the leading opponents of marijuana legalization is a guy named Robert DuPont. He works for a group called DuPont Bensinger. DuPont Bensinger is one of the leading producers of drug tests. He doesn't want to see it legalized. He wants you testing as much as possible. And the thing about the drug tests is they are completely counterproductive to what you want to accomplish. Say you got a moody teenager. You got a moody teenager who's in the band, or maybe he's in drama, and you suspect he's using drugs, so you P-test him, he turns up positive, and so what do? You take him out of the band, you take him out, you suspend him, you isolate him. So then what's he gonna do? He's gonna feel like a loser, he's gonna feel like he doesn't belong anywhere, and he's gonna go back to using drugs. The experts tell us that the problem with drugs, the people who have problems with drugs, there's not a problem with the chemical per se, it's their environment and their adaptation to it. Have you ever heard of Rat Park? There's a very famous experiment called Rat Park, and what they did is these guys got these rats addicted to cocaine. You know how scientists like to do. So they got these rats addicted to cocaine, they'd press the lever for cocaine and starve to death. They'd rather get the cocaine than the food or the water. Gotta have that cocaine. And this researcher said, well, maybe it's because we've locked them up in this little ass wire cage with nothing to do. So he set up an experiment where they had the little ass wire cage with nothing to do and the cocaine in it. And he set up another cage that was Rat Park. It's got wheels and it's got cheese and it's got movies and surround sound, whatever, right? Whatever rats like. I don't know what rats like. But it was like this haven for rats, like rat paradise. The rats in Rat Park didn't overdose on the cocaine. They tried it once, went back to the water and food. It was the environment the rats were in that was causing them to addict to the cocaine, not the cocaine itself. And the same is true for people that have problems with marijuana or alcohol or sex or food or hoarding or anything like that. It's a maladaptation to your environment, not necessarily who you are or what the drug is. Now that can have an effect. Who you are, predilection to addiction, that can have some effect, but largely it is the environment that's the problem. And finally, the last group that's making money keeping marijuana illegal is Big Pharma. I love it when they say we're gonna have a drug-free world, a drug-free America, and the next commercial on my TV is for Abilify, or Cialis, or Lamisil, or any number of pharmaceutical preparations that marijuana can largely replace. Cialis, you know Cialis, the erectile dysfunction pill? Its generic name is Tadalafil. Ta-da! I think that's funny. They always say like our marijuana strain names are so silly, but then they name a drug Tadalafil that does, you know. All right. But, Xanax, the top five most advertised drugs in America, two of them are erectile dysfunction pills, and the other two are types of painkillers, stuff that marijuana can largely alleviate. And as I've said earlier, we've surveyed medical marijuana patients, and 2/3 to 3/4 of them say they're replacing their pills or cutting down on their pills because they have medical cannabis. Big Pharma doesn't like that. They want you to keep using the pill. They've got that Abilify pill. I love the Abilify pill. Is your antidepressant not working for you? Well, take this pill to help that pill. And they do the same thing. Take oxycodone. Oh, it makes me constipated. Well, we've got a pill for the constipation. Oh, well, the constipation pill makes me nauseous. Oh, we've got a pill for the nausea. So it's a racket here. It's a profit motive based on fostering addiction, and the pharmaceutical companies don't want the competition. And that's why the Partnership for Drug-Free America was founded by the alcohol and prescription drug industries. So this is all a racket. Keeping marijuana illegal is a tool of controlling a certain segment of population. Now, I'm a middle-aged guy with a cop's haircut. I don't usually have much problem with weed. But my cousin Kenny, the black fellow with long dreadlocks, he's got to worry, right? I've got, as Paul Mooney would call it, the complexion of protection, right? But that's not the way we should run our society. That's not the way we should run our drug policy. Idaho, please sign the New Approach Idaho petition. Let's move forward with the reasonable step of decriminalizing marijuana, creating medical marijuana, legalizing industrial hemp, and then as the rest of Idaho sees the sky doesn't fall and, hey, we're making some money,
We'll move to full legalization.